Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. It's your girl, Jacqueline, alongside one of my favorite people on the internet and in person, Mr. Mark Ellis. How you doing, sir?
Hey, look at that. Wow. I don't know why I got the glowing intro, Jacqueline. Do I owe you money or something? What exactly? Are we okay? Now, you did help me get my Twitter unhacked, so I appreciate that.
I appreciate that, too. I'm very glad that it happened. That was actually one of my favorite things that happened too, because Mark unlocks his Twitter and then 10 seconds after I start roasting him about the Commanders, because I learned, which I did not know, that only 27 or 28% of people that live in the Washington, D.C. area support your team.
Okay, which, first of all, that number is 29%. Thank you.
Excuse me, 29%.
Yeah, when you watch our home games, you can really tell how little of a fan base we have left, because it's packed with opposing fans. And so hopefully we rectify that this year with, oh my God, I'm going to stay optimistic until the season starts.
Look, hopefully, you know what? Stranger things can have happened. Ah, get it? Oh, that was so great.
Oh my God, the queen of transitions.
I'm sorry, I was so excited about that one in my head, I couldn't even enjoy it. Like, I couldn't even like let it lay. I'm just so happy about it. But yes, that's because this week, we are going to turn the world upside down, ladies and gentlemen, as we break down seasons 1 through 3 of Stranger Things. That's because the first half of season 4 premieres this month, May 27th, and season 5 is supposedly to be the last. But looking at the Netflix stock price, I think they might keep those kids limping into way past post-college, because overall, this is a huge success for Netflix. 93% fresh on the tomato meter, 91% average on the audience score. Season 1, 97-96, season 2, 94-90, and then season 3 pulling up the rear at 89-86. Still so incredible. And we have a guest along with us today. I feel like he's straight out of Hawkins. Like, I feel like he really could wear one of those shirts. Like, he feels very much at home, I feel, with our Stranger Things crew. This is Eric Striffler. He's the creator and host of Pretty Much It. Check it out on his YouTube channel. It's a hilarious movie and TV commentary show. Maybe he gets an assist by somebody that's very familiar to the pod named Mr. Brian Pettis. We'll talk about that later. Eric, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. And yeah, go Tigers. Go Hawkins Tigers, baby. I wish I had a Hawkins Tigers shirt right now. I don't. Last time I was on for the Mummy episode, I had a whole wardrobe thing planned, and I don't have that this time, unfortunately. But I'm very excited to be back talking Stranger Things, especially because I feel like it's going to be an interesting discussion. I have some thoughts and opinions on the seasons that might differ. So very excited.
Wow. Are you going to be loading up the hot take cannon? Because listen,
I might be.
Wow.
We'll see.
Eric's always good for a hot take, Jacqueline. And here's what I love about Eric the most is that when Eric started out, and really when Stranger Things started out, I always looked at Striffler as like one of the kids on the bikes who's looking for their friend Will Byers. And now, Eric, you find yourself in the position of being like one of the older kids that isn't like the adult yet, but you're also not one of the core kids. So you're just kind of that guy that floats around in a van around town, and we're not sure if we can trust you or not.
I was going to say I've upgraded from a bike to a van. Still hunting for kids, though. In the woods, you know, whatever.
Wherever you can find
them. Love,
yeah, exactly.
Well, let's get down to it. Eric, is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about the season scores of Stranger Things. And is it right to have that ranking, 1, 2, 3, with 1 being the top, 3 being the bottom? Where do you feel the ranking should be? And do you feel the scores are right?
No, I feel it's the exact opposite. I think that each season is better than the last with I shouldn't say is better than the last. I think that the second season is really not great. But I think that the third season is without a doubt the best season of the show. And so I'm not surprised that it goes in order 1, 2, 3 going lower each time, just because that feels, for something that's generally well received, that just feels like a common thing that would happen anyway. But I do think personally that the third season is absolutely the best season of the show, even though the kids are getting older, which I think even works against the show. And the fact that it's still good makes it even more impressive.
Yeah, no, I think the show is always improving, but I think like with anything, as somebody who rarely, even the shows that I love, you'll hard press to get me to watch past season 4 of The West Wing, and I've seen that show probably 100 times. I like earlier episodes of shows because if people know the logistics and realities of creating television, that's sort of like the first couple of years in like a political White House. It's like the dream team starts everything off and then they slowly splinter off to do other things. Alec Berg eventually does leave Seinfeld and he goes and does his thing. You know, that's sort of the thing that happens with television shows. But honestly, I think with Stranger Things, for the most part, they've kind of kept that core crew. So, Mark, let me ask you, is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about the scores? Like, do you feel...
I don't know what you all are talking about. The first season of Stranger Things deserves to be where it is at 97% fresh, but I look at this overall average of 93% across the three seasons. That feels a little high for me because I agree with Eric that the second season is the worst of the three, and it really suffered from a sophomore slump to the point where, Jacqueline, this must have been you season 5 of The West Wing, because I barely got through this season. I do feel like season 3 rebounded somewhat. 89% still feels a little high because I just thought they were leaning so hard into 80s nostalgia, and by that point I just wanted a more fun story than just like, hey, here's what 7-Eleven used to look like. But I still enjoy the show. I'm very excited about the new season. I can say that every season I think is fresh, although season 2 is like right at the 60% cut line for me. But yeah, that first season really blew me away when I, like everyone else, had never heard about it, saw it was trending on Twitter, binged it in 2 nights, and was forever changed.
Before we get too deep into it, Mark, can you give us the who, what, when, where, and why of all that has happened in the seasons of Stranger Things, going back to season 1 as quickly as you can, sir?
This show is about kids and adults that kind of act like kids sometimes. And when one of those kids named Will goes missing in season 1, hell breaks loose in the small town of Hawkins, Indiana. And it turns out to be a lot more than just a missing kid, because he is in this nether region called the Upside Down that features Demogorgons and a whole lot of crazy, scary stuff. And that's basically who we're going up against for all 3 of these seasons so far. Luckily, we have an ace in the hole in the form of Eleven, played by Millie Bobby Brown, who has some supernatural telekinetic sort of powers. We're still figuring out how she got it. Why does her nose bleed all the time? And why is she so strong and powerful enough to defeat something like a Demogorgon? She has a surrogate father figure in Sheriff Hopper, played by David Harbour. And he has a surrogate daughter because he lost his daughter tragically a few years before the events of the show. And as we've mentioned already multiple times, the show lovingly takes place in the 1980s. Remember the mall, everyone? Remember the mall? It was a lot of fun to go to the mall. And that's Stranger Things in a nutshell.
Yeah, back when we had malls. The mall in my hometown is now a community college. If you want to know how that economy is
downgrade.
Gone.
Eric, are you too young to remember how exciting it was to have your mom drop you off at the mall on Friday afternoon?
I don't know if it's maybe just like a regional thing or not, but it's funny because I was thinking in the back of my head, I still go to the mall.
So maybe
they're not by you guys anymore, but yeah, like the mall I grew up with is still here, and around the country is like, if I need to go clothes shopping or whatever, I'll go to a mall. So they're still there. You got to look for them though. They're like a diamond in the rough, I guess.
See, all the malls I go to now are not really malls because they're not covered. So it's like the Grove or like Topanga. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess technically that's a mall, but if you have to have an umbrella to traverse it, I don't consider that a mall.
There's a lot of like open concept malls.
I need a food court and like, you know, the chance that you might get beat up somewhere. This is not happening around the corner from a Total Wine and, you know, a world market. It's just different. It's very different, right?
It is different. It is different.
Anyway, why don't we go ahead and see what Tim Ryan has to say about what the critics thought about these various seasons in our segment, 2 Minutes with Tim. Brian, cue the music. 2 Minutes
with Tim. When it comes to both critics and audiences, the first three seasons of Stranger Things have been remarkably consistent. Here's a quick rundown. Season 1 of Stranger Things is certified fresh at 97% on the tomato meter with 91 reviews, and it has a 96% audience score. Season 2 is certified fresh at 94% with 150 reviews, and it has a 90% audience score. Season 3 is certified fresh at 89% with 140 reviews, and it has an 86% audience score. Overall, the series as a whole is fresh at 93% and it has a 91% audience score. So what do the critics have to say? In a fresh review for season 1, Mary McNamara of the Los Angeles Times wrote, "For the most part, and in absolute defiance of the odds, Stranger Things honors its source material in the best way possible, by telling a sweet and scary story in which monsters are real, but so are the transformative powers of love and fealty." However, in a rotten review for season 3, Tori Preston of Pajiba wrote, "Stranger Things 1 and 2 offered cohesive stories that surpassed the weaknesses of some of the parts, whereas Stranger Things 3 had some truly outstanding parts that did not make up for the weakness of the overall story arc." So that's Stranger Things. Let's kick it back to Jacqueline and Mark, two people who are on a curiosity voyage and need a podcast to travel. Back to you, folks.
I do love him. I would have loved it a little bit more if he would have sang the theme to Neverending Story, but... way to go, Tim. I really appreciate that. Let's go ahead and start talking and breaking it down because there's a lot to digest here over three seasons of television. So let's go ahead and move into the TV talk section. Brian, cue the music. Gotta like switch my brain a bit. We normally do movies, but now we're into TV talk. So Mark, you kind of talked about it, but it legitimately was a phenomenon when it first came out. Eric, when did Stranger Things come into your consciousness? Was it Comic-Con led you into it? How did you get excited for it?
I similar to what Mark said, I just saw that everyone was talking about it, I guess. Or, you know, I think leading up to it, everyone was talking about it. So I caught it when it debuted on Netflix. And also, like Mark said, that's a binge immediately kind of show. It was kind of at the beginning of binging, whereas now you see a lot of the different streaming services actually switching back to weekly, which I personally prefer. I like to ruminate on these things and keep myself, you know, excited every week. But this was at the height of the binging phenomenon, really, I would say, or the dawn of it at least. And I finished it, I want to say, in a day. I think me and my friends sat down and like through the day, roommates came in and were like, "Ooh, wait, what is this? Oh, I want to watch." And they just like came in at different episodes and then went back later. But I will say this, though, not to get too ahead of ourselves because we're talking about the first season, but the second season, I didn't watch until the third season was coming out because I just, for some reason, wasn't hooked enough from the end of the first season to be excited about the second season.
Well, that's the situation with me, but that's just because I have issues. Mark, what about you? That's legit. Like, even a show I like, it's sometimes hard for me to sit down to watch it if I feel anxious about what will happen. But that's
okay,
another
fair.
Thing for another day. Mark, what about you? What are your season one reactions to Stranger Things?
So I this was sort of like my peak years of going to Comic-Con and covering everything that was announced at Comic-Con. I do not remember if Stranger Things had a presence at Comic-Con before season one, but I the way I remember it, I never heard of this show. Literally never heard of this show. Don't remember seeing a trailer or anything for it until I was on the road at the Cincinnati Funny Bone, which technically I think is in Kentucky. And I did the show on Thursday. There's one show Thursday, two Friday, Saturday, one Sunday. So I do the show Thursday and I go back to my hotel room and I just start, you know, trolling around on Twitter and I see Stranger Things and everybody's talking about the show Stranger Things. And I'm like, oh, well, I have my laptop. I can watch Netflix. This is exciting technology. Let's fire it up. See what. And I fell in love with the feel of the show. I mean, we all know how I feel about children, but I like these kids well enough. And it was just the overall vibe that it was retro. It was spooky. It was funny. It was scary at points. And I just got so invested into the multiple storylines going on. It was nice to see somebody that I recognized like a Winona Ryder, but then it was also great to meet these new talents that were emerging on the scene. And that went, I loved the first season, and that carried me through the excitement of seeing them do a panel the next year at Comic-Con previewing season two, and that trailer, everybody lost their minds. It was such a cool trailer. But yeah, season one was a binge for me. And I think I'm mixed, Eric. I like some shows that make us wait a week to watch the new one, but I also like every so often just having that weekend where it's like, all right, let's just knock out everything Ozark has to show me.
Yeah, there's Better Call Saul's good weekly. Bridgerton is good in a binge. There's differences, there that go, kind of vibe. Yeah.
Bridgerton is good in a binge. Sacrilegious. Oh, hurt me. Stab me in the Vivaldi, why don't you?
You're trying to keep it dragging out?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We will discuss, like, your thing with the Greatest Showman and musicals, I also have too, but my love affair with romance novels is deep and unabiding. Fair. And yes, and, yeah, like, it's a thing. One thing I will say about Stranger Things in the early seasons, which the secondary seasons I feel have not as created, is in the early seasons, it was Erica, it was Barb. It was so many side characters that made people fall in love with the show more so than the actual leads. Like, the leads are rather insufferable, if I'm being honest. Like, I'm just being honest. Like, privileged kids from Indiana, is a really hard time for me to be like, yay, you are struggling. Sorry, I just didn't get it. But when they had, like, Erica make fun of them, I loved that. When you had Barb being like, oh my God, we're in your teen angst drama and I'm just going to be your best friend and I don't want to be. Like, I loved all of the sort of, I would say, modern sentiments or just sort of like meta commentary on this stuff more than anything else. So I think those were the things about the early seasons that I really, really, really loved. And I think that's what made me forgive some of the more, like, I would say, this is... something so nostalgic is going to feel like it's from a different time and it will get boring unless they have characters like that or moments like that, which makes me think, like, one of my favorite, I don't have a favorite episode, but one of my favorite moments in the entire thing was, I think, episode one, season two, when I want to say that they were arguing about who got to play Venkman. And they wanted to give the black kid Winston. And as every black kid who only had to play the black kid in Power Rangers and every other show, mm-hmm. I felt that so deep in my soul. I was like, oh, y'all got black people in the Stranger Things writer room for season two. Because that's exactly what that is. Like, nobody who hasn't lived that didn't feel that. So that, to me, was one of my favorite moments, episodes, all together.
Why can't there just be two Venkmans?
Because there's only one Venkman in real life. We planned this months ago. I'm Venkman, Dustin Stans, you're Egon, and you're Winston.
I specifically didn't agree to Winston.
Yes, you did.
I don't think he did.
No one wants to be Winston, man.
What's wrong with Winston?
What's wrong with Winston? He joined the team super late. He's not funny, and he's not even a scientist.
Yeah, but he's still cool.
If he's cool, then you be Winston.
I can't.
Why not?
Because
you're not black?
I didn't say that.
You thought it.
What about you, Eric? Favorite episode, favorite moment, what do you got?
Well, if we're just talking season one, I would say that the...
Oh, no, overall.
Overall, okay, because I was going to say, well, in season one, favorite thing I can think of really is the waffles, the introduction of the waffles. The whole, you know, like when she's in the store, you know, and whatever, and gets the waffles. Because I personally was very impressed with, yeah, they're doing an 80s nostalgia thing, but they did actually create something iconic. And it felt like that scene, like just her, you know, her outfit, you know, you saw it at Halloween, you still see it at Halloween. Her outfit, the shaved head, the waffles, the whole deal feels like something. Still, if I go back and watch that, it feels like something that we're seeing a remake of that actually is from the 80s. It feels like they're doing their take on something that actually was from the 80s. And I find that to be extremely impressive when you can do 80s nostalgia, but make your own thing and have it feel genuinely like an old school thing. I find that very impressive. And I feel like that was the most iconic, you know, kind of visual from the first season. And again, the first season's not really my favorite. So, you know, the favorite parts I have are things like that. I would say overall, the ending of season three had to be my favorite. I think that the big fight in the mall was just the best. I don't know where they go from here. I really think it was that good. I don't know where they go from here. I think they peaked and I'm very curious to see what comes next. But it was an incredible finale that now apparently is only the middle of the story. So I guess we'll see what happens there.
I'll tell you where they go, Eric. Where they go in season four is no supernatural entities whatsoever. They just figure out puberty. Like, that's the only thing that is facing them.
I think they figured it out a lot.
Yeah, these kids are like 20, right?
Yeah.
It's like the cast of 90210 when they were all like 35 playing, you know, sophomores in high school.
Yeah.
What I do love about this show, full disclosure, I do a show called Versus, which you can enjoy on Peacock. And I'm writing Stranger Things versus Cobra Kai. And it's funny because Cobra Kai like takes place in modern day, but it has a lot of 80s nostalgia. This show takes place back in the 80s, and it's reminding us how much fun we had. But I agree with Eric's point that this show, it does, you know, sometimes it relies too heavily on, hey, look at how fun the 80s were. But most of the time, it really sticks the landing. And for me, my favorite episode in season one and overall is The Bathtub. Is the name of the episode. And that's basically where it's towards the end of the season. It's the seventh episode. And this is where we get the warning from Lucas that agents are about to come search the house. And so we have to go on this like ET feeling adventure. And Eleven is using her telepathy to like flip vans. And then later on in the episode, she's kind of sensing what's going on the upside down. She can confirm Will is alive, which is like a huge thing. And Barb is not alive. And that sucks for Barb. Justice for Barb. But then we also get to see some fun Demogorgon action. We also get to watch Hopper and Joyce team up as they're trying to break into the lab unsuccessfully, though it may be. It's fun to watch their chemistry, but the overall feeling of this is, I think, exactly what the Duffer brothers were going for when they created the show, and that's to make us feel the way that we all felt when we were kids, seeing E.T. levitate bikes for the first time.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yeah, listen, I will also say too, on the whole, like, where we end up with like just how crazy the magic and crazy how the special effects get. I did give Stranger Things a lot of crap for their price tag, but the later season's effects compared to the first season is just kind of astounding.
And oh,
the
yeah. fact season that we're three is unbelievable. It actually makes the first two look bad.
Yes. And so the fact that we're able to do that on television, I am, of course, being like facetious in it. That price tag will always have me be like, this is not Game of Thrones. Like, they got to make swords. I get that. You know what I mean? But like, you know, whatever. Yeah. Also,
you think the sword budget is more than it costs to put a replica RC Cola in a 7-Eleven?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've got to get that right.
And they make dragons over there, too. Like, let's be real. Like, they all have
dragons.
But no. But let's be honest. They also, like, if the Stranger Things season 5 just doesn't end up being the last season of Game of Thrones, they win. So, like, we're good. Other thing, too, and Eric, you sort of spoke and touched on this, is this idea of the first season of Stranger Things really felt like, to your point, a period piece. It felt like a movie made within the vein and within the sentiment, as if the Duffer brothers were creating something that could have been created right alongside Amblin and those early sort of like days of that sort of nostalgia, or I would say the nostalgia that we live in now was created in that time. And this and those first seasons, later seasons feel like throwbacks. Later seasons feel much more like we have more modern sensibilities and we are definitely calling back to this thing. But we are no longer trying to create it with that sort of Amblin-esque vibe and that sort of
it's not emulating it anymore. You're right. As it goes on. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And when you look at something, which it shouldn't, because again, they're trying to branch out and create their own things. But if you look at something like the Adam Project, that is a complete and simple thing that lives within that one space. And that's what the first season of Stranger Things is. And I'm not going to lie to you, as they get further away from the things that they idolize and are trying to comment on, that's, I think, where they get in a little bit of trouble with the storytelling, and it doesn't, I think, work as well, which then leads some of us to like say which are the moments that we like less. And I think for me personally, there's one episode that a lot of people like come against is The Lost Daughter. Mark, how
I was going to say, are we going to all agree on this?
I don't think so, because I actually liked that episode.
Oh,
I did not understand the whole thing about hating it, other than I think people are impatient and they were binging. But that's my theory first. So, Eric, you disliked The Lost Daughter, I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, yeah, sorry, not to butt in because you're going to ask Mark there, but yes, okay, I will say it's for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's my least favorite because it literally interjects at like the peak of the action. We're about to have the Demogorgons attacking everybody. We're waiting for, we know that Sean, what's his face? Aston, what's his name? Is it Sean Aston? I forget the actor's name always, but he's about to bite it. We know it's coming. He's been the whole show. He's been like, I love being alive, and we know he's never going to live. So it's like, you're excited, you're ready. And then it cuts to this thing with Eleven, which the thing is, I actually, and this is maybe, here's the hot take, Brian, can we play the hot take music? Great, thank you. here's the hot take. I don't think Eleven really matters anymore after season one. I feel like they're shoehorning her in pretty much at this point. Maybe in season three it got better. In season two, keep in mind, they keep her away from the crew the whole time, because if she was there, it's like Captain Marvel. If she was there, they'd already win. All she has to do is just show up and do her thing, the same thing she did in season one. So the fact that she already felt sort of like irrelevant to the show at that point, and they gave her a whole episode with these middle-aged guys that are for some reason like hanging out with kids as outcasts or whatever. Millie Bobby Brown is like 14, and there's like 30, 40-year-old men, and they're like, we're the freaks. Yeah, you are freaks. You are freaks. Get away from her. That whole thing, I just didn't care for it. And then at the end of the beginning of the next episode, it gets right back to where we were at the beginning of it. And I'm like, yeah, just, we didn't even need to watch it. Just cut it. Forget it.
See, I liked having Eleven and Hopper's relationship like grow. Like, I like seeing that father-daughter stuff expand. And I think that it's an interesting point you make, because I still feel like Eleven is necessary to the show, but her powers were so overwhelmingly new and supernatural feeling in season one that it's sort of like, all right, now where do we go from here? And that's why I feel like season two took such a dip down. But then we did rebound pretty well with season three.
Powers are much cooler in season three than ever before, because season one and two, all she does is scream with her hand up, the end, that's it. In season three, she's throwing the Demogorgon around the room, and it's the coolest thing, and it's like they finally figured it out.
It's like a Jedi. It's like Luke Skywalker gets his ass kicked by the Rancor if he's fresh off rescuing the princess and blowing up the Death Star in the first Star Wars. But it's the Jedi training kicking in, man. I'm telling you, Jacqueline, this is what this show is predicated upon, is learning your powers and figuring out how to get into college.
Yes. And I will say that
you're muted, sweetheart.
Oh, shoot. Sorry. I was just about to say, well, it's because of the dog. I didn't want you to hear the dog having conversation with you. I was just going to say, though, not going to say it's completely whatever, but this idea of, training your senpai, it's like a bit on the nose, honestly, in like 80s, whatever. I was more enjoying the more tender, heartfelt moments, like David Harbour writing a letter about keeping the door open. Like, that's where this thing really hits.
Hits
really good. And everything that doesn't, I feel it isn't. But no, not The Lost Daughter. She's still important. And for moments like I just said, I do feel she is the Data character from Star Trek The Next Generation. She is the Spock character from the original series. It's this idea of a very highly intelligent, probably one of the most powerful people in the crew, also being in some ways the most vulnerable because their lack of human interactions and experiences. I love that idea of a character. It gives them so many more interesting places to go. That's what The Lost Daughter was. That was something that had never been given a chance for individuality, been given individuality. Because remember, she just went from her father's control to a group. That was the first time she got to actually be some of herself. And I think that is important. I do think that it's not a wasted episode. I just think if you put it in the middle of where it was,
and
people are binging, they're going to be upset. But if that wasn't a show that you didn't binge, I don't know if it would have been the same sort of whatever. Mark, what about you? What's your like least favorite aspect of the series overall?
I think my least favorite aspect of the series is when it does feel like we're just filling time. I don't feel like the episode we're just talking about was necessarily the worst culprit in that, but I even feel like, as much as I love the end of season three and that battle at Starcourt Mall was just so epic and expansive, I felt the length of it, and it felt like we have, you know, all this money to spend now, so why not just throw everything at the wall? And it just didn't feel as clean from a storytelling standpoint. I think it just got a little too bloated for its own good and a little too reliant on how much we did love the mall. Having said that, there are still a lot of things that I liked in Eric's favorite episode, which is not limited to the fact that we're having this battle while there's a bunch of theater goers inside a movie theater watching Back to the Future. Like it's a really fun juxtaposition and yet another reminder as to exactly what time period we're in.
No, that was a very cool pull. It very much felt very Twister. Remember Twister when they're watching The Shining and the tornado hits? It felt very when I was watching it. So characters, I think I definitely go ahead and say, Eric, I don't think 11's going to be yours, but who's your favorite and who are your least favorite characters?
Yeah, so the thing is, it's not that 11's my least favorite character so much as it just, and specifically in season two, it felt like they didn't know what to do with her and they just sidelined her. Because again, if she was there, they wouldn't have had any of the problems they were having because she just shows up and defeats the monster in the same way that she did in season one. Which I didn't care for myself. I thought that it was a little bit, convenient, I guess. In season three, it felt much more natural. So 11, not my least favorite character by any means overall, but in season two. So I'll stick with her just because that's easier than thinking of somebody else right now. My favorite character, I honestly think, is Billy. I mentioned it before. Billy, who, of course, I'm devastated that... Well, it seems like there might be something with him because we see a little tease, you know, you never know. But obviously he died and I cried my eyes out. I'm a little baby boy. I cried when he died in season three. Season two, his introduction was very interesting because if you remember, I didn't know what exactly they were going with. They didn't make it really clear at first. I was iffy on the character because in season two, he was looking at the only black character in the show and saying, stay away from him. And I was like, oh, so this is a racist character. We don't like him, obviously. Turns out that wasn't necessarily what he was all about. They picked maybe the wrong character for him to be pointing at, to, you know, whatever. That's where my mind went. But it turned out that he had a lot more going on to the point where he got some backstory in season three that was very impressive. And the thing is, I remember thinking in season two, we got a lot of backstory of 11. And I was like, there's another character here that we need more backstory from. And then they kind of answered my prayers there a little bit with him. I think he's my favorite because he went from the bottom to the top. Because at first I thought that he was like a really rotten character. And he, even though he was an adversary, obviously, in season three, of course, he was being controlled. It wasn't necessarily him. And I am hoping that somehow he shows up again. We'll see what happens. But I think I got to go with him.
Well, who's your least favorite?
I'm going to stick with 11, even though it's not technically appropriate, you know, whatever. A least favorite overall is hard to say, but because of season two, I'm going to go with her. So specifically 11 in season two is my least favorite. Not overall. I'm going to go with that.
Okay. Mark, what about you? Favorite and least.
So I'll start with my least favorite. I don't know why I can't get behind a performance this guy's done in so long, but like, is something about the way Matthew Modine plays the character just bothers the crap out. I don't know what it is. It's probably a me thing and not a Matthew Modine thing, but I just feel like he's overcooking.
I'm like, you've interviewed this man in my presence.
He's great in Vision Quest. He's great in Memphis Belle. But I just can't do him in The Dark Knight Rises, and maybe that transfers over to the way he plays Martin Brenner. I just can't. I can't get on board with it. So I was thrilled when Paul Reiser showed up as sort of like a, wait, do we trust this adult kind of guy in season two? Yeah. My favorite is so tough because I really find something that I can enjoy genuinely out of all of the main kid cast, but there's just something extra with Dustin. And Gaten Matarazzo plays him so well. But then when we also get to see the way that him and Steve sort of team up and in season three, that's so fun, even though it's very distracting to look at Joe Keery, who plays the character of Steve, because he might have the best head of hair like I've ever seen on a human in my life. Like his hair is just, It's so stupid thick and full and just luscious. I'm like, it doesn't matter what science does for hair restoration. It's never going to be able to give you that head of hair. I don't know how that happened, but keep that lettuce, kid. It is just gorgeous.
Yeah. No.
I want to see you guys make shirts, by the way. It's not a Matthew Modine thing. It's a me thing.
It's a me thing. I like that.
That's a good shirt.
I mean, honestly, like, we have so many other things to deal with on the podcast. But if ever we're sitting on an abundance of time, yes, a merch shop would definitely be a part of my thing. In fact, Rotten Tomatoes is wrong, folks. If you guys think we should have merch, I think we do. Let us know at Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. Email Lucy and be like, merch. We want merch. I want something that says the Ketchup Crew. I want something that says see y'all next time, y'all. And I want something. Mark, what's your catchphrase?
His catchphrase is, you know how I feel about kids. Let's be clear. You did say that earlier.
Dog stepfather. Wait, I'm babysitting Molly. Like, that's what the shirt can say or something.
Yeah, it can just be Molly the Wonder Dog snoring, who, as we're recording this episode, is celebrating her 15th birthday. So happy birthday to Molly the Wonder Dog.
Yay!
The merch that we would make for Jacqueline is, and this is like merch that you can order and you can customize it however you want, but it's the blank of it all.
Yes! So
Jacqueline, like for me, our combined shirt would just be like, it's the Matthew Modine of it all.
Yes, yes.
There you go.
Actually, that is the thing. I will call publicists and be like, I need to talk about mm-hmm. the this of it all. And it'll be like some aspect of the movie. Oh, I love this so much. Anyway, back on track, just a moment, really clear, before we have like this sidelined merch conversation, which by the way, it will not even be a sideline. It'll be a complete one. I just want to add this. My favorite characters are never really full characters because they get to just come in. I love day players. I love people that come in, murder a scene, just steal every inch of everything, and then just watch as everyone else is just trying to. So Brett Gilman, who plays the conspiracy theory guy.
Yes.
Live. First of all, love him in everything. He's the only American in Fleabag and just completely makes sense. Like that right there is just incredible. The fact that he just shows up in that and is still one of the best parts. He's great in this. He has so many incredible movies. So he's up there. Erica is another one because yes, I just wish I was Erica when I was that age. I was not. I was very much like hiding away. I was very more a Will Byers who thought like Erica. Like I was just like kind of hiding away, reading my books, but I had the wit of Erica. So I love her. Least favorite character, Mike. Mike Wheeler, you are such trash. You are so whiny.
Damn.
You are so whiny. You are so annoying. You are so the worst versions of every boy that had your existence. Just be happy. Be privileged. Don't be mad. You do not get to be angsty, sir. Just get over it. Like, I was so over him in the last two seasons. He was every worst example of 13-year-old boys. I hated him. And he was annoying, and he was whiny, and he was entitled, and I just did not enjoy it.
Man, between you and me, Mike and Eleven are our least favorite characters, and we're still watching the show.
I was going to say, like, I did. I think a lot of our listeners and viewers did not expect to hear such slander against Mike and Eleven today. I love you, Mike. I love you, Eleven.
This is the thing. Him on his worst day, he's still fine. But when he whines, he whines. He just whines.
He also has one of those, like he, more so I think than any of the other kids, suffers from the I'm growing up and I can't help it kind of thing.
Yes, to where it's like.
Dustin and Lucas, to a degree, still look like they can pull off playing younger kids easier than Mike can. But Mike is luckily blessed with possibly the greatest marquee name of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, the name Finn Wolfhard and Millie Bobby Brown, I could enjoy saying those names out loud all day.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I love Finn Wolfhard because one of the things I absolutely love about him is he could have very much leaned into his teen heartthrob status, but he's very much like, no, I just like to make movies and play with my band. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like he just seems
chill.
To be very about his own thing. So no, I love him. And and honestly, if it was him as a 13-year-old, I would follow that dude's entire life. I'm like, yeah, I want to hear more about you. Give me your angsty teen drama. I can be with it and not hate you. Mike Wheeler is the worst. But I think they're doing that on purpose because most of us are awful when we're teenagers. So it's completely authentic in that respect. Does not mean it makes me, he makes my left eye twitch. is like legit, like without question, he makes my left eye twitch. I cannot change it other than that. There's so many other great characters though. I love what David Harbour does as
I was just gonna say, we gotta give at least a runner up.
Yeah, no, Hopper is so, I think, just doing his best and just trying. And I really love him and is doing his best just trying dad stuff, because that to me is also real.
And have you guys caught, by the way, all the, I don't know if you, you know, how deep you've dug into Stranger Things, but it is actually tied into Hellboy. And if you look really closely, you can see there are hints and nods to Hellboy throughout. And the thing is, as we get closer to the finale, it's going to cross over into Hellboy. I'm just saying, where's David Harbour right now? Hell, he went to hell at the end of season 3, okay? He got blasted to hell. It's Russia.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
he's in Russia right now.
Not going to say you're wrong about that. But also, let's be real. I think that's just David Harbour being friends with the Duffer Brothers and being like, we're trying to get a sequel.
I'm just saying, listen, just keep an eye on that hand. That's all I'm saying, okay?
Lord. I love the way we meet Hopper, though, in season 1, where he's just passed out and you got a bunch of beer cans everywhere. It's like, we know exactly who this guy is. The role of playing that small town sheriff who is just trying to pass the buck of responsibility onto anybody else is great. Mm-hmm. And it would have been fun enough as a superficial character on that wavelength. But then when we get to know his backstory, it means so much more. And then we're rooting for him, and we're rooting for Winona Ryder's Joyce just to find mm-hmm. some sort of happiness in their lives now, because they've been through so much as humans and as parents that you just want them to have a fun date night where he gets to dress up as Magnum P.I. But see, here's the conundrum for me is that I went back and I watched a couple episodes of season 1 of Stranger Things. And I remember the only real criticism of the show at the time was that they thought a lot of people said Winona Ryder's overcooking it. And I'm like, have you ever lost your kid in the Upside Down? When they start communicating via the Christmas lights, oh my God, what a moment that is.
No, I thought that was absolutely perfect. And I think it actually showed, first of all, if the internet and pandemic proved us anything, I watched a lot of crazy people in the pandemic videos losing their stuff.
Yeah.
What she goes through in the Upside Down ain't nothing.
Well, she's got it together.
I've seen people have a stronger reaction about, you know, walking with a mask in Whole Foods. Yeah. So, like, right. She's allowed to lose it a bit over her child being disappeared and possibly murked by an ever-present being. Like, I'm okay with that one. I also, too, want to just say, like, the Duffer Brothers for, you know, they're loud, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you're Simone Biles, you get to walk with swagger. They got rejected. Thanks, Mark Hoffmeyer, for telling us. There are 37 network executives right now kicking themselves because they had Stranger Things and they turned it down. Yeah. I always say, though, the show that gets turned down is never the show that you see. The reason why all the women turned down Pretty Woman was because it was a really dark, like, she was addicted to drugs, horrible movie. That was not the Pretty Woman that we got to see. So the movies or the show that Stranger Thing was going to be when it got rejected was not necessarily what we get to see. But I love that these guys persevered and they made their show.
And also, I don't go to Stranger Things for subtlety. I'm not watching it like, oh, I can't wait for this really subtle little drama. Like, no, I'm going for fireworks. And that's why I love the finale of season 3. I got fireworks.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And look, I mean, they definitely, I think, care about nostalgia, but they also have made a lot of, I would say, efforts to make this the most marketable things. Like, there are Stranger Things Doritos on the shelves right now, ladies and gentlemen, as we get ready for season 4. They have broken the mainstream. It hits on a different level. So, Eric, where are you on your anticipation level of season 4? Are you rushing to it? Where are you at?
So I'm mixed because I really do think that they did a great job wrapping up everything in season 3. And it felt like, you know, Hopper's dead, Billy's dead, and it was like, It felt very final, you know what I mean? It felt like this could be an ending. And that's always a concern when you're like, this could be the end of something and then it continues. My favorite TV shows are the ones that end, that just end when they're supposed to end, when they should. You know, The Leftovers, for example. 3 seasons, we're done. That's it. Love that show. Excuse me, don't need any more. We're on Better Call Saul final season right now. I don't need more. Let's wrap it up. Let's keep it good. So unfortunately, I'm worried that we will have peaked at 3, for me at least, peaked at 3, and now maybe it's going to go down when it could have ended on top. But at the same time, I am very excited because I want to see what happens with Hopper. I want to see, you know, I don't watch trailers and stuff, but I've seen little things on social media. So I know that he's around. I know, you know, whatever. I know that Billy is alluded to here and there. So I'm excited for that. And the other reason I'm excited is honestly just to watch it with my buddy Miles. We do commentary tracks over on pretty much it. And the most fun thing is watching shows like this with my friends. And so I'm excited about the communal aspect of it. That's going to be really fun.
It's still a fun event. Yeah.
It's still a fun event
to talk about whether you're watching with people in person or you just get to tweet about it once you get back into your Twitter after it got hacked. And you look at what season four could give us. And what I'm really excited about is I think they are going to lean into the fact that these kids are so much older now than they were in the first Stranger Things. I think they're going to have fun with that because as older as they are, they're still kids and they're still trying to figure out their life and they're still trying to navigate, you know, the waters of dating and getting good grades and trying to figure out what you want to do with the rest of your existence. There's a lot of fun questions you could ask, but the big issue I've had, and I hope it gets rectified. I think this is going to take place in 86, I believe, this next season. They haven't had not one that I've spotted Van Halen poster in any of the kids' rooms, not one Van Halen shirt. I know that the music is expensive, y'all. I realize it's much more expensive than Whitesnake, but you got to give me something, all right? 86 is when Hagar joined the band. You could easily have a 5150 poster or somewhere in the background.
Yeah, how expensive is the logo?
Make me feel like it's there. Yeah. So that's basically what I'm looking for. That and just to see where the Duffer Brothers want to take this mythology leading into what we presume is going to be the final season five. This is sort of like the setup, but Eric, I feel like we all get a mulligan after season two, for me anyway. So I kind of strike season two from the record and I'm like, all right, this is really my season three of Stranger
Things. Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Strike season, man. Me in season two, I'm going to have to do a deep dive on just season two because there is shade abounding it and it has literally some of my favorite moments, including the emergence of Erica, including all of, I think, every aspect of what we were able to see with all the characters that we didn't get more time with. So I was about it, even if you guys weren't. Just some final things on Stranger Things. The one thing I will say with this is it has become a phenomenon. I'm so glad of what it's done. But now that it's reaching its swan song, and especially as it has been so synonymous with the success of Netflix, they had Squid Game, which is great. But I wonder what is going to be the next English language show that captures the way that Stranger Things did. Bridgerton is its own thing, and it's true, but it's not the same as Stranger Things. Stranger Things was all-encompassing, men, women, every demographic. I love Bridgerton, but ladies and the gays, we are making that show, and we are just dragging you straight boys along for the ride. Stranger Things.
It's so funny you say that because I was just doing commentary tracks for Bridgerton, actually, and I was talking about how I love Benedict. I think he's extremely attractive, and I was like, ladies and gays, and then I was like, wait, which category am I in if I also think he's attractive?
No, I mean, we are bringing y'all along for the ride. There are definitely men that are in here, but this show was both created, and I'm not kidding you, by black women and gay men. When I tell you this is my stuff, this is my stuff. Chris, gay man, black woman, gay man, we made this baby and it is Bridgerton.
It is not as all-encompassing though, you are correct. I'll agree with that. I love Bridgerton, but I agree, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Ozark is like too dark, even though like a lot of people kind of fallen for that show and like binged it when it comes out. The closest comparison just to the phenomenon that I remember season one of Stranger Things being when it came out that weekend was during the pandemic when everybody couldn't shut up about Tiger King.
Exactly.
But, you know, I don't know.
That's run its course too, though.
But that's run its course too, and it can only have one. I mean,
Petered out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because there's been several shows that peaked in the pandemic and they haven't been able to sort of mask that later. Love is Blind, the second season, wasn't as good or as memorable. I have to be sad to say, as much as I loved it, not as many people were about 365 days as I was, but I still live for it.
I can't wait to watch the sequel. I'm watching that when I get to LA with a friend as well. I'm ready.
That's going to be so ridiculous.
I do enjoy the circle from time to time.
The circle, yeah.
Some trash viewing. And I will say this, as widely viewed as Stranger Things season three was, season three dropped and Netflix very rarely reports any of their numbers because they're stored next to the Ark of the Covenant. But season three in its first month got 560 million hours of views. That would be a record if not for Squid Game, which in its first month on Netflix did 1.65 billion hours
that's
of views.
Insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the kind of numbers you're talking about. And in truth, I don't think anything can replicate that, even Stranger Things. But
no.
That is it for our TV talk section. Let's go ahead and rip open the mailbag. Brian, cue the music. This is from the Ketchup Crew member, Robbie Miskimming?
McSkimming. McSkimming.
McSkimming.
It sounds like a fun new sport.
I like this. Robbie McSkimming. Sorry, sir. Thank you for the assist, Mark. Hey, love your podcast. I was wondering, could you ever cover the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise, sir? Sir, are you watching YouTube channels right now on legal TV?
Well, this might be the best time to do it, right? With the SEO.
Who says? I will wait until there is less chum in the water, as they say. But yes, I would like to cover Pirates of the Caribbean because, fun fact what people don't know, I loved the first movie. I've seen it probably 60 times. I love, love that movie. I listen to the soundtrack. The rest of them, I have loved moments.
Yeah.
But the very first one, to me, you are perfect.
I loved it too.
This one's a very special movie.
I saw that one like twice in the theater. Went specifically twice to go see it. And I was like, you have to go see this. It's the greatest thing ever. And I had never even ridden the ride. I just liked the movie.
Okay, see, the ride is boring now.
Enough. Next. I'm a theme park guy, so I love the ride.
You're a theme park person?
Yeah, like,
are you one of these Disney adults? Are you one of these people?
No. If anything, I'm more of a universal adult, I guess, technically, because I'm a Universal pass holder. But I love theme parks. Mummy ride is down for refurbishment right now, and we just hope that Brendan stays in it after.
Oh, man, you really
longer.
Know.
Okay.
Technically, I heard about this last time.
That's right. I'm a Universal employee, and you know way more about that theme park than I do. It's actually really funny. Probably. We have guests coming into town, and my friend was like, well, what can you do? And I was like, I think they can get us into Universal. And they looked at me like I was such a, like, bad person for not telling them that I had free access to a theme park. And
I was like,
oh yeah, you're some of those people.
Yeah, it's pretty normal. If you like go to the movie theater there once a week, it's pretty normal that there's a theme park right there. Yeah.
Or even that, I just don't know if I was ever in a city with a theme park. So I will do European Disneyland just because I like to laugh at people, or like I've been to Disney in Japan. I've been to Disney in France. I like that. Mm-hmm. Absent that, I don't want to see you at a theme park. I don't have the reason to go.
No, that's a lot of work.
Mark, what about you? How are you on the Pirates?
I love the first one. The rest of them all run together. I think it was the first movie I saw when I moved to LA was Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Damn.
Uh-huh. Wow. Yep.
When Eric was still a zygote.
I was going to say, I don't want to know.
I don't want to know.
No, I will say, actually, that is I think that's my first... I mean, when did that? That came out with like 2003. So I was actually, I was like 12. So I'd seen movies and stuff, but it's my earliest memory of Johnny Depp, actually, I think. I don't know that I necessarily knew, I'd seen maybe stuff with him, but I don't know that I necessarily knew who he was. And then I saw that movie and I was like, who is that guy? And that's when I like realized like, oh, this is a big actor. I didn't realize, you know? Yeah. I was like 12. I was like 11. Yeah. I didn't really realize. And then I went back and I was like, oh, that's the guy in this movie. And, yeah, exactly.
It looks a little different, though.
When you're a kid, you can't tell who's who exactly when they're in makeup. But yeah, that was an early
anything
memory.
Anything you want about Johnny Depp, to me, he's always going to be the guy that got sucked into a bed in A Nightmare on Elm Street.
This is true.
To me, also, he's always going to be Mort Rainey from Secret Window.
Oh, really? See, I used to watch reruns in the morning when I was getting ready. And so at first he was 21 Jump Street because I watched him on that. That was my first one. All right. Well, Robbie, we will see if we can make that happen. I am down for the concept. All righty then, folks. If you want to be like Robbie, email us at Rotten Tomatoes, RT is wrong, at RottenTomatoes.com. That's right, RT is wrong at RottenTomatoes.com. Email us and tell us what you think we should be covering, particularly if you are a fan of Hook. We need your videos, y'all. We want to compile them together so that we can do this Hook episode as is meant to be. Whip out that iPhone or Android, if you're one of those people, and film your face and tell us why we should do Hook. We will compile those and put it up for that episode. Eric, sir, thank you so much for joining us. Tell folks where they can find you and what you're working on.
Well, thank you so much for having me again. You guys are a blast. This is always fun. You can find me on Pretty Much It. If you go on YouTube and look up Pretty Much It, that's probably the easiest way to find us. You'll find our Stranger Things 1, 2, and 3 videos. Depending on when this goes up, we might have a video up for Stranger Things 3.5, which is Hellboy. And then, of course, Stranger Things 4 on the way. Can't wait.
Oh, I love this. Also,
he's not letting this Hellboy thing go.
He really isn't.
Just, you got to read between the lines. It's there.
I will. I'll check it out.
So funny. I do have to ask you, though, since you are a man in the know and on all things TV and movie, do you have a recommendation that you would like to give our audience?
Oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that. I should have thought of that ahead of time, because last time I think I recommended maybe Cry Wolf.
I think so.
You know what? I'll recommend Secret Window.
Oh, okay. Secret Window. Okay. Very cool.
I just rewatched it recently. I saw a funny review of it. It said, this is a great movie for people who have never seen movies. And it's because it's maybe a little predictable, but me at 13 years old thought it was the most brilliant thing, and it's still a fun movie.
Is that the Johnny Depp?
Johnny Depp, John Turturro, Maria Bella. It's a good quick little movie based on a Stephen King story, and so I'll go with that just because it's, again, like we said, SEO. It's relevant right now.
No, don't disagree with you on that one. I will just add this. There's a video game called Don't Starve. I'm about to make it a huge part of my personality going forward. I just want to let everybody know that it is not related to TV or movies, but if you're a member of the Don't Starve fandom, come find me on Twitter. Is it a mobile game? It's everything. It's on Switch. Oh. It's on Steam. It's a survival game, and you die very quickly. And like everyone else is playing Elder Ring on my Steam right now, and I'm just over here and Don't Starve, making my camps and milking beefalo. Okay. Yeah, Don't Starve and Don't Starve
don't
together.
Starve.
Yeah, okay. It's kind of addictive, but so is this podcast. So if you're going to have addictions, keep listening. Keep telling us what you guys want to do. Eric, sir, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
And I want to let everyone know, if you're listening to this, first of all, did you know that we have other podcasts that are coming out? Because that's right. We have another show, one of which I host, called The After Show, and another one that Mark hosts called Binge Battle. And both of them will now be audio episodes that you guys will be able to listen to on our Rotten Tomatoes channels. That is The After Show and Binge Battle. The After Show is where we break down shows that are coming out and get folks to have a spoiler review of what happened, what didn't happen, and looking ahead to maybe see what happens next. And then Binge Battle. Mark, why don't you tell us what Binge Battle is about?
Well, we take some beloved personalities from inside and outside the world of entertainment, and we talk about a particular show. Usually it's a streaming series of some sort. Occasionally we'll do a movie, and we take some topics. We have a fun debate about it. I award points, and it's just a celebration of whatever we're talking about. So it's a very fun show for people to listen to, and very tough for me to decide who wins and who loses, because I love everyone.
I do love this. All right. Well, for folks, please listen in. You can see that on our OTT channels and on our podcast channels. Again, that is After Show, which went live last week, and Binge Battle, which will be live tomorrow, 5:20. All right, folks. Next week, you all need to tune in for Mark.
Dinosaurs. Wait, even bigger dinosaurs. Jurassic World. Jurassic World.
I really thought you were doing the old movie Dinosaurs, man. I got excited.
Oh, you mean the TV show? Dinosaurs?
What a great show.
No, that movie with the like Allosaur, whatever the hell, stupid movie that the ride is based on at Disney World in Animal Kingdom.
Oh, no.
There's also a show.
The show is great, though.
Oh, there was a show. Okay, that's right. I forgot.
Everybody do the dinosaur.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway.
I thought you were doing Dinosaurs.
Also, Dinosaur, one of the first black sitcoms on main television. Folks don't know that. That was a black TV show. Check out the dinosaur's hair. Black TV show.
We might not even get to Jurassic World next week. It sounds like we got a lot of stuff to talk about.
I know. If there's shows about dinosaurs, we can do it. Anyway, that's it for us this week. Tune in for Jurassic World, where we break down how Bryce Dallas Howard was able to run in those shoes. We will be back, ladies and gentlemen, for next week on Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. See y'all then.